This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. On this podcast, our focus turns to the Supreme Court's groundbreaking gay rights rulings and their many implications for employers. On June 27th, the court struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, defining marriage as being between one man and one woman, and also rebuffed an appeal by gay marriage opponents in California, who supported a gay marriage ban in the Golden State. So what does all of this mean for the world of HR? Actually, quite a bit, and likely more than some professionals may even realize. That's why we've assembled an all-star panel of legal editors from our team, each of them specializing in a different aspect of employment law, to address head-on what the Supreme Court's historic pronouncements mean for you. Tracy Morley leads our coverage of healthcare benefits news and has more than 25 years of HR experience encompassing multiple disciplines. Melissa Burdoff is a former in-house counsel and employment attorney who now spearheads Expert HR's coverage of the Family and Medical Leave Act. And Rena Piersos has more than 20 years' experience as a payroll tax law editor and writer, and she handles our coverage of those issues. Tracy, I'll start with you. It seems like just yesterday we were sitting here a year ago talking about the Supreme Court's decision to uphold the Affordable Care Act, and now here we are again with another 5-4 decision that has big ramifications for employee benefits.
That's right, David. And here we are 1 year later talking about another decision that has huge implications for sponsors of employee benefit plans.
Well, people have undoubtedly heard, Tracy, of the saga of Edith Windsor, the New York woman who challenged the Defense of Marriage Act after being told that she had to pay nearly $400,000 in federal estate taxes, something she wouldn't have had to do had she been married to a man instead of to a woman. Amazingly, the Windsor decision affects the application of more than 1,000 federal laws, and it seems like benefits is the ideal place to start, with things like COBRA and HIPAA very much in play. So what are a couple of big takeaways that you see from this case for employers from a benefits standpoint?
Well, David, the court's ruling striking down Section 3 of DOMA has significant impact on the administration of employee benefit plans, since same-sex married couples that live in a state that recognizes same-sex marriage are now treated the same as opposite-sex couples, making them eligible for the same federal benefits and protections that are linked to marital status. From a practical standpoint, this means that same-sex spouses are not now eligible for continuation coverage under COBRA, may be entitled to special enrollment rights under HIPAA, and may even be eligible for reimbursement for expenses incurred under health benefit plans like flexible and health savings accounts.
Tracy, let's say a same-sex couple gets married in one of the 13 states plus the District of Columbia where such marriages are recognized, and then moves, perhaps because of a work transfer or another reason, to a state where they are not recognized. In that situation, does a spouse have a claim to a pension or a right to some form of retirement benefit?
Well, this is where it starts to get tricky, David. Most tax-qualified retirement plans subject to ERISA have provisions in place that are dependent upon the marital status of plan participants, including receiving survivor benefits under a retirement plan. Right now, it looks like any retirement plan feature that depends on marital status will only apply in the state that recognizes same-sex marriage. Until we receive additional guidance, we will not know how these features will apply to same-sex spouses who are married in a recognizing state but move to or live in a state that does not recognize same-sex marriage.
Now, Tracy, does it make a difference where the employer is headquartered? In other words, if they're headquartered in a same-sex state versus a state where these marriages are not recognized?
I don't think so, David. While the question remains as to what state will govern when determining who qualifies as a spouse, the more common options seem to be looking at either the state where the marriage was celebrated or the state in which the employee lives. It could also be the law of the state in which the employee is employed, which may or may not be the state in which the employer is headquartered.
Now, a question that often comes up, including among employees right here, is let's say I enroll in my company's health plan once a year in October, and I can't change my benefits till the following October, barring a qualifying event, such as a spouse losing their job or some other major life event, such as a birth or a marriage. Well, what exactly is a qualifying event, Tracy? Would this ruling trigger qualifying events under employer plans, since the striking down of DOMA has expanded the pool of people who are entitled to benefits in states recognizing same-sex marriage?
The qualifying events to which you are referring are also known as life event changes. As you mentioned, once an employee enrolls in the benefit plan, he or she is usually not allowed to make any changes until the next open enrollment period. A qualifying event is a personal change in status that allows the participant to change his or her benefit elections and include things like a change in marital status, a change in the number of dependents through things like birth, adoption, and death, and a change in employment status. Now, the ruling itself is not considered a qualifying event, and I really don't see the ruling triggering additional qualifying events, since insured health plans that operate in states that recognize same-sex marriage more than likely already allow these changes. Where I think we will see a big change is the treatment of how the value of health benefits will be treated for federal income tax purposes.
Thanks, Tracy. Let's turn now to Melissa Burdoff, who covers all things FMLA for us. Melissa, the Family and Medical Leave Act wasn't directly at issue in the Defense of Marriage Act case, but it's another employment law whose benefits were tied to the definition of the word spouse. The Department of Labor, in an opinion letter from the late 1990s, had stated that only the federal definition of marriage and spouse as established under DOMA could be recognized for FMLA leave purposes. So now that Section 3 of DOMA has been struck down by the Supreme Court, what do you think that means for same-sex married couples seeking leave under the FMLA?
Well, David, first off, more couples will now be entitled to FMLA leave. Under the FMLA regulations, a spouse is considered a husband or wife as defined or recognized under state law for purposes of marriage in the state where the employee resides, including common law marriages in states where it is recognized. Pre-Windsor, as you mentioned, the Department of Labor said that DOMA's federal definition of marriage and spouse applied to the FMLA since the FMLA is a federal law. As a result of that, employees in same-sex marriages were ineligible to take FMLA leave to care for their spouse with a serious health condition or one that was a covered service member with a serious illness or injury, or to make practical arrangements when their spouse was on covered active duty in the armed forces and they needed to take time away from work as a result. Now, because DOMA's definition of spouse is inapplicable, employers should once again look to the FMLA and its regulations for the definition of spouse. A same-sex spouse's right to take FMLA leave to care for his or her spouse will now be based on whether the couple's marriage is recognized in their state of residency.
And what about the FMLA regulations, Melissa? How do those affect the landscape?
The FMLA regulations seem to make clear that the state where the employer is located in, or where the employee works, or where the marriage was celebrated is not important. What is important is where the employee resides. Hopefully, the Department of Labor will soon issue guidance to shed a little more light in this arena. But for now, employers of employees that live in states that license and permit same-sex couples to marry or give validity to same-sex marriages legal in other states, such employers should consider an employee married for purposes of the FMLA. One thing I did want to mention, David, is for employers in New Mexico. New Mexico is one of the states that recognizes the validity of marriages legally performed in other states and allows for the recognition of same-sex marriages. So, for example, if George and Mike marry in California, a state that recognizes and licenses same-sex marriages, and they move to New Mexico, and then George finds out Mike needs to have emergency heart surgery, George, assuming he is otherwise eligible, will be permitted to take FMLA leave to care for Mike, even though they were not married in New Mexico, and New Mexico does not perform same-sex marriages.
That's a great point, and actually follows up on something I discussed with Tracy earlier in the health benefits arena, and that is, are we going to essentially have one set of rules for things like an employee who wants time off under the FMLA to help care for a spouse's serious health condition in states where same-sex marriages are recognized, and yet another set of rules in states where they're not recognized?
Well, David, this is really an area where it will be the employer's choice. Many employers will have employees in multiple states, some recognizing same-sex marriage and some not, and such employers will essentially have two choices. Choice number one would be the employer could treat same-sex married couples differently under the FMLA based on where the employee resides and only provide leave to same-sex spouses residing in states where same-sex marriage is recognized or a state that gives validity to same-sex marriages. In this type of scenario, when an employee requests leave to care for his or her same-sex spouse, an employer would need to carefully check the employee's state of residence and then determine whether the state the employee lives in recognizes the employee's marriage as a valid marriage under that state's law. If the state does not recognize same-sex marriage, the employer could deny the leave request outright. Some negatives to this approach are: an employer would need to be keenly aware of all states' marriage equality laws where its employees live and be careful not to deny FMLA leave to employees who live in states that recognize same-sex marriage but work in states that do not. So, for example, if an employer has an office in New York City but draws employees from the entire tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, such an employer would need to provide FMLA leave to same-sex couples in valid marriages in New York and Connecticut, but not for those who live in New Jersey. If an employee lived in Connecticut and then moved to New Jersey, tracking residency would become critically important. Also, employee morale could really be negatively affected. So, as stated in the example above, employees that work together may live in different neighboring states. So, for the employee in the state that doesn't recognize same-sex marriage, he or she may resent that they cannot take leave for their same-sex spouse, but his friend across the bridge can.
Now, Melissa, you mentioned that there is a second choice available to employers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Employers also have the choice to adopt a uniform policy, which would allow all employees in same-sex unions, whether it be marriage, civil union, or domestic partnership, to take spousal leave regardless of state law to ensure equal treatment and promote an accepting workplace culture. Employers are always allowed to give greater family or medical leave rights than legally required under the FMLA. However, an employer can only designate leave as FMLA leave if it falls under one of the FMLA's qualifying reasons for leave. Therefore, a potential negative consequence of voluntarily treating all marriages equally and extending leave to individuals who are not legally entitled to receive it are: it is possible that employees in same-sex marriages who reside in states that do not recognize same-sex marriages will actually get more than 12 weeks of leave. And in addition, as employers love to hear, it can be a leave-tracking nightmare. For example, if an employee lives in Texas and he takes leave to care for a same-sex spouse under the employer's policy, that leave time would not reduce the employee's 12-week FMLA entitlement because Texas does not recognize same-sex marriage. So, the employee could qualify for an additional 12 weeks of FMLA to care for another family member.
So, in a weird sort of way, an employee in a state like Texas, if I understand you correctly, might actually be better off than in a same-sex marriage state, at least under the FMLA.
That is true if an employer adopts the uniform policy for all employees.
Very interesting. Are there any other FMLA implications stemming from this Supreme Court ruling that employers should be aware of concerning their leave policies?
Well, of course, some states also have their own state FMLA equivalent law that may define spouse to include same-sex domestic partners or civil union partners. For example, in California, employers covered by the California Family Rights Act must provide state leave of up to 12 work weeks for their employees to care for a same-sex spouse or a domestic partner with a serious health condition. Prior to Windsor, if an employee lived in California with his or her same-sex spouse and he or she wanted to take leave to care for their spouse, that employee could take leave under the state law but not the FMLA, since the FMLA did not recognize same-sex partners as spouses of one another. That way, the 12-week FMLA entitlement remained untapped. Then, if that employee later needed to take leave for his or her own health condition, they would have 12 weeks of FMLA leave. Following Windsor, the state leave and FMLA leave can now run concurrently since California recognizes same-sex marriages. So in effect, such couples actually get less leave. However, because the federal FMLA does not yet extend coverage to domestic partners or civil unions, and Windsor did not impact this, an employee in those relationships can still use the state leave to care for a domestic partner, but his or her employer could still not count this time against the employee's FMLA time, and the employee would retain any FMLA leave to which he or she is entitled and could use that FMLA leave for another qualifying reason.
So are there any other considerations regarding leave that employers should now take into account?
One thing employers should do that's fairly easy to do is just review their FMLA policies and make sure that they say spouse instead of husband or wife. Also, the administration of FMLA leave and state leave needs to be properly coordinated and tracked. Managers in HR need to be familiar with under what circumstances employees in same-sex relationships can take leave under both federal and state law. Also, apart from FMLA considerations, employers with employees residing in states that recognize same-sex marriages should take a look at existing policies that provide for leave based on spousal relationships, such as non-FMLA leave, bereavement leave, or military leave. Policy language, such as how a spouse is defined, may need to be revised, especially in states such as Delaware and Minnesota that just recently recognized same-sex marriages. When an employer reviews their non-FMLA policies, they should keep in mind any anti-discrimination laws that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation or marital status. Such laws now extend protections to individuals in same-sex marriages. Therefore, when employees seek to confirm an employee's same-sex spousal relationship, the employer should ensure it does not discriminate in any way. An employer's practices regarding FMLA leave for employees in same-sex marriages who reside in states that recognize same-sex marriages should be handled in the same fashion as those in heterosexual marriages.
Thanks, Melissa. We'll turn next to a subject that might make many in our audience cringe, but is still very important from an HR perspective, and that's taxes. Rena Pearsos reports on payroll tax issues for us here at Expert HR, and she's been monitoring the DOMA case as well. Rena, Justice Kennedy, in his opinion for the 5-4 Supreme Court majority, wrote that DOMA writes inequality into the entire United States tax code. The case before the court concerned the estate tax, but now that DOMA has been overturned, what does it mean from a tax perspective generally?
Well, David, what the court means by inequality in the Internal Revenue Code is simply that before the DOMA decision, the value of health benefits provided by an employer to an employee's same-sex spouse and any of their dependents was included in the employee's federal taxable income, while at the same time it was not included in the federal taxable income of an employee with an opposite-sex spouse. The result was that an employee with a same-sex spouse was paying higher federal income and employment taxes, that would be Social Security and Medicare taxes, also known as FICA taxes, than an employee with an opposite-sex spouse receiving the same benefits. So in the end, the employee in the same-sex marriage would take home less pay in his or her paycheck than the employee in the opposite-sex marriage. So the DOMA ruling essentially levels the playing field as far as federal income and FICA taxes go.
Rena, you mentioned leveling the playing field, but the states have been really all over the map. So where do things stand for the states now for tax purposes in light of the Supreme Court's ruling?
States still have the right not to recognize same-sex marriage at all. And Section 2 of DOMA, which was not covered by the court's decision, allows states to refuse to recognize same-sex marriages performed legally in other states. Throwing more complexity into the mix is the fact that some states that do recognize same-sex marriage follow federal law for tax purposes and have been imposing state income tax on same-sex spousal benefits, while other states that also recognize same-sex marriage do not follow federal law and have not been taxing the benefits at the state level. So there are questions about how the ruling will impact same-sex spouses who were legally married in a state but live and or work in a state that does not recognize same-sex marriage. The bottom line is that employers who previously withheld state income taxes from same-sex spousal benefits should no longer do so if an employee's same-sex partner is considered a spouse under the law of the employer's state. Now, hopefully, we'll see some clarifying guidance or statements from individual states or policy statements on these issues in the near future. But until same-sex married couples are treated equally across the country, employers that operate in more than one state will have to deal with this patchwork of state laws defining the term spouse.
Well, we'll certainly have to stay tuned to see what comes down the pike with those guidances. But another important question that has arisen, Rena, is whether the post-DOMA definition of spouse is now retroactive for federal tax or benefit purposes. What's your sense on that?
Well, that's a very important question, David. We're waiting for the IRS to issue guidance on whether the new federal definition of spouse will apply retroactively and whether there will be refunds available to employers and employees of the taxes already withheld. Employers may end up having to amend 2013 employment tax returns and possibly even prior years' returns for employees who are same-sex spouses in affected states. Employers may also wish to file protective refund claims for the employer portion of FICA taxes. Currently, they can do that back to 2010. That's the oldest open tax year for which they can file protective refund claims.
Now, this is a tricky question, perhaps, but in layman's terms, are employers going to have to essentially reprogram their payroll systems so that they no longer withhold income tax and FICA tax for benefits provided to same-sex spouses residing in states where these marriages are recognized?
Yes, some programming adjustments will have to be made by employers, and this normally takes time to accomplish. Employers with employees in same-sex marriages may want to encourage those employees to check on whether they should adjust the number of withholding allowances claimed on their federal form W-4 and submit a new form. They may now wish to add their same-sex spouse and/or their children from that relationship as dependents. Employers use employees' W-4s to determine how much income tax to withhold from employees' pay, taking into consideration the number of individuals who may be claimed as dependents for tax purposes.
Speaking of areas where more guidance may still be needed, and certainly there are some here, I want to go back to our health and benefits specialist, Tracy Morley. Tracy, are there any other areas of uncertainty that you see as still being left open by the Supreme Court's decision in United States versus Windsor?
The court's ruling actually poses significant challenges for employers and leaves many questions unanswered, including, like Rena said, whether the ruling will be applied on a prospective or a retroactive basis. It also remains unclear if an employer in a state that does not recognize same-sex marriage will be required to do so for benefit plan purposes.
Thanks, Tracy. While the Supreme Court's ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act has received the most attention, it was actually only one of two high-profile opinions the court issued affecting gay rights. The other case, Hollingsworth versus Perry, involved California's controversial voter-approved ban on same-sex unions, known as Proposition 8, that a federal court declared unconstitutional. And while gay marriage opponents challenged that ruling, the state officials responsible for enforcing California's laws refused to defend the law. Ultimately, that refusal proved telling to the Supreme Court, as the High Court ruled the gay marriage opponents did not in fact have standing to challenge the ruling below because they had suffered no injury. In other words, they had no real direct stake in the case. So the end result is that the same-sex marriage ban is officially kaput in California. Rena, from a payroll tax standpoint, in light of this ruling, where do things stand now for California employers?
Well, David, same-sex marriage is once again legal in California. After the case was decided, a stay that stopped additional same-sex marriages from taking place while Hollingsworth was being appealed was lifted on June 28th. California is one of the states that does not impose state income tax on same-sex spousal benefits. So now California and federal law are in sync on the issue. All same-sex married couples in California are now entitled to all of the same rights and privileges of marriage under both California and federal law. The law in California was, and still is, generally, that employers that provide health insurance coverage to employees, opposite-sex spouses, and their children must also provide it to employees' same-sex domestic partners and their children to the same extent, and the benefits are equally tax-free, whether they're opposite-sex or same-sex relationships. California employers that paid their share of FICA taxes on the benefits in the past for federal purposes may be entitled to a refund, as we discussed before. And same-sex married employees for whom the employer withheld the employee's share of FICA may also be entitled to a refund.
Now, Rena, was there anything else to note that you think California employers really need to know about in light of the Hollingsworth ruling?
Yes, I want employers to be aware that same-sex couples who were married during the period in 2008 that same-sex marriage was still legal in California, that's specifically June 16th through November 4th, 2008, which was when Proposition 8 then took effect and put same-sex marriage on hold in California. And now after Hollingsworth, those married on or after June 28th, 2013, they all have the same state tax benefits as opposite-sex married couples.
Okay, Rena, it certainly will be interesting to see what happens going forward. And it's also worth noting that in late July, the California Supreme Court denied the San Diego County Clerk's request to immediately halt same-sex marriages in the state. So even though the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Hollingsworth was a narrow one when compared with the Defense of Marriage Act case, it certainly looks like the ground has been paved for same-sex marriage in California. Well, that's all the time we have for this podcast. But before we go, I want to again thank my expert HR colleagues, Rena Pearsos, who you just heard from, Tracy Morley, and Melissa Burdoff for their reporting insights and for contributing to an informative discussion. I'm David Weisenfeld. We hope you've enjoyed this ExpertHR.com podcast. Be sure to check our website regularly for more bi-monthly podcasts on hot-button employment law topics affecting the world of HR, including a panel discussion on how marijuana legalization laws impact the workplace.
The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about ExpertHR and our subscription offering, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. Again, that's 1-855-973-7847.